I'm Dick Gordon. Coming up, the story of a young woman starting up her own business. Allison Wright makes custom picture frames, but she also has the ultimate say over who works with her, over office hours, design, sales. What makes Allison's story interesting is that she has Down syndrome. There was a time, not too long ago, when people like Allison wouldn't even have been allowed outside on their own. Now she's arguing with her father about just how much independence she needs.
Well, he's said, Dad, please, let me do my own way. And he's just like, Allison, do the right way, I said. It says, Dad, really, I'm working hard, okay?
There have been struggles of wheel.
Allison and Edward Wright will explain what it's like to set aside disability and make the most of ability. The father and daughter picture framer team will be here right after the news. When Allison Wright was born with Down syndrome, there were those in the family who insinuated that it might be best for all if a place were to be found for her, an institution. Well, Allison Wright has found a place, her own place, at her father's framing shop. Here she is explaining how the finish on a picture frame is built up.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Okay, it's just like painting, you know, because you put the white paint, like, because you're standing, you cannot send it down to the wood. Send it back, stick it to the glue wall. And I just take me like 2 years to learn the stuff.
But Allison doesn't just work there. She now has her own piece of her father's business. It's called Micro Enterprise. And it turns out that what was originally designed for people in developing countries has the same promise for people who are developing skills. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
The Story is produced by North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. It's co-produced and distributed by American Public Media.
Whenever we talk about employment statistics, we don't generally talk about people with developmental disabilities. And with good reason, there's not much to boast about. 74% of people with these kinds of disabilities don't work. The explanation that was given was pretty simple and pretty cold. These people don't fit in the workplace. What's changing, though, is that the workplace is being fitted for them. Allison Wright and her father Edward came into the Story studio to talk about Allison's new job. She told me that much of her time is spent on the work of sanding the picture frames and gilding them with paper-like leaves of gold.
Well, because I'm working hard. Sanding, gilding.
Can I ask you something about gilding, though? I once watched somebody do this gilding.
Right.
And they have this fancy little paintbrush that they use
right. To
pick up each sheet of gold leaf, and then they have to lay it down in the frame.
Right.
And they can't do two. You can only do one, or you'll mess it up.
Well, some I mess it up.
I'd mess it up.
No.
Yeah,
no.
I would.
Well, you see, because when they put the gold leaf onto the frame.
How long did it take you a long time to learn how to do this properly?
Yes. Because my dad teach me how to do the gold leaf.
I have a question about that. Is he a good teacher?
Yes, he is.
He doesn't yell at you?
No.
Never?
Never.
Do you ever?
Never.
Do you ever yell at him?
Well, never, because my dad, like, he's never yelled. He teach me how to do the framing. And because my dad teach me a lot, and he is teach me how to do to the frames right. And I think it's like my dad, he is working hard, you know.
Your dad works hard?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You work hard?
Right.
I want to ask the two of you about this idea of creating a business for Allison. Where did that idea come from?
With my dad. I think he's like working hard. I think he's working.
Well, do you remember when we first talked about doing the business?
Yes, Dad. Yeah, I did. Yeah, Dad. Talking about the business, you know.
What did you say? Let me go back to Edward. What did you say at the very beginning? Can you guys remember this conversation?
Allison was doing real well, and having her own business just seemed like the it was exciting, but it also actually offered a lot of financial benefits. So as she was doing the work and I saw that she could do it well, it just sort of evolved. I don't think there was one day when we said, aha, this is it. We just gradually moved into it.
Well, you see, I'm going to say aha for you, Dad.
Do you remember saying aha? Did you have an aha?
Whatever. Well, because I'm working hard, you know, the framing.
Allison, let me ask you something. I know that it was some time ago. Did you ever think, I don't want to have my own business? It's too much work. I don't want that responsibility. Did you ever say that to your dad?
Well, some. With my dad. You know, Dad, please. Let me do my own way. And he's just like, Allison, do it the right way. I said, Dad, really, I'm working hard, okay? Because I'm really, I'm not better.
There have been struggles of will. Yeah, because my sign's up on the front, and Allison wanted to know when I was going to take it down.
But the sign at the frame shop has not yet been taken down. Allison and her colleagues haven't decided on a name for her new part of the business, and I'll talk more with Allison about that a bit later on. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. I want to spend a moment with Allison's dad, Edward. He has a lot of experience working with people who have disabilities. His two older sisters, Beth and Linda, were twins. They were born in 1948, and they were both blind.
They were born premature in 48, and at that time they were using incubators, but they were using too much oxygen, so they were both blind at birth.
Were they little babies?
Very little, like 1.5 pounds, and they didn't think she was going
to live. I was going to say, at that time, to survive at that size.
They did. Yeah. And our family was kind of unusual. My mother and father really worked hard at exposing them to incredible opportunities. They went to Switzerland, and there were six of us. In our family, they were the stars. I mean, they were the ones that we all emulated. There was no sense of a disability. Certainly my parents held that.
And it wasn't pandering to them, I guess.
No, not at all. They were the ones leading. I mean, they were going to Europe, learning Arabic. You know, they were really pushed. And this is in the 50s, so it was very unusual. The fact that we went to Europe was in the local paper.
Do you think that was something that your mother and father did consciously or was that just the way they were?
It was the way they, particularly my mother. I would say for Daddy, it was a way to compensate for this tragedy. For Mother, it just became her life. You know, she was totally absorbed by it. And they were incredibly competent at trying to overcome this handicap. And, you know, in some ways, I think it was sort of out of hand. There was too much pushing. But I didn't see that. All I saw was these two remarkable girls that were, you know, I was in a family, we were kind of following along. So
the amazing thing is, Edward, that at that time, 50 years ago, blind children were often put in a school for the blind and kept inside so they didn't do themselves any damage, and their own intellectual growth was stunted for that reason.
And so, yeah, it was incredibly unusual. And they went to regular public schools, so they were including them in the regular education at a time when it just wasn't occurring. But again, to me, this was just normal. I didn't see it as exceptional. I just, you know, this was my life.
So how did it come to pass that they ended up working in the framing shop?
Well, once they got older, things didn't work very well. They had a very difficult time. One sister went to Occidental, the other went to Pomona, so they were very smart. But once they got out of school, the support was cut. And they had both had a very hard time.
Do you think their expectations perhaps had been raised too high then?
Well, more the expectations of other people. And they had a real hard time getting support from social workers because the social workers saw these two fairly wealthy, brilliant girls, and they said, you don't need support. So they didn't give even the basic support. So they needed work, and it was just sort of natural for me to have them in the shop. In fact, I hired everybody in the family except my father. And my sister Linda did shellacking of frames because we were doing all finishing, and my sister Beth ended up answering the phone and taking notes for weekly meetings.
When you think back to including them in the work of the shop, would you say, Edward, that your hiring them was in any way an act of charity?
No. No, I really don't. And people often would, you know, they would give me incredible credit for, you know, this is such a marvelous thing. And it was a very natural thing. You know, she wanted to do something. So at that time, when I hired him, there wasn't a real sense that it was they were going through that bad a time. I just felt like this would be a good outlet for them. And I knew they were isolated. There was some, you know, there's some charity there. But it was more just, this is what I do. And again, I saw them as the stars. So even having them around was part of who I was. So it was, I didn't sit down and say, well, I'll do something great and hire people with handicaps.
Edward Wright is now part of a new wave of thinking about how to give people with some disability some more independence. In years past, Allison would have relied on Social Security for income, perhaps spent her time in a sheltered workshop or in some form of adult care facility. But when her dad learned that Allison could make her own money without having her Social Security cut, he came up with a plan. Edward arranged to buy a special piece of equipment that does intricate carving on a picture frame, kind of like a router and a computer hooked up together. It's called a shop bot.
There's a shop bot. And we made the circles and the frames.
Make the trees.
We made the trees.
This is where all the safety...
Safety gears.
Okay. What's the safety gear, Allison? What we use for safety gears?
Glasses. Safety.
You wear the headphones for the sound because you...
Did the sound can get up and out. Turn it on. Push this.
Turn it on. There you go.
And then you turn this on.
Wait a second. Don't push the button yet. You got to set it to 12,000 RPMs.
Yep.
Remember, push it down. Push this button down.
You push that thing down.
That's good. Okay. And you want to place the board on the origin. 00. Because the machine knows where to start and where to come back to.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's good.
It is quite engaging to hear Allison at work, in her shop, on her own machine, with her own business manager. But it wasn't easy for her or anyone else to get this far, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. The sign on the front porch in Hillsboro, North Carolina says, Frames by Edward Wright. Edward's been in this business for over 30 years. He is, by anyone's measure, a master framer. One of his latest projects is setting up a separate business within his for his daughter, Allison. She has Down syndrome. Now, in just a moment, I'll talk more with both Edward and Allison about that, but I wanted to hear more about how Edward himself got into framing. He says it was kind of by chance. His wife, Phyllis, had made a small piece of embroidery that he wanted to have framed for his sisters. So Edward went over to his father-in-law's shop where there was some framing equipment, and he just never looked back.
And I just went in, and within 2 hours, I'd made these small frames. And I just was real attracted to the smells and just the simplicity of it. I just had a lot of fun doing it.
Then, there's something, as you say, quite basic about it, but there's also something quite intricate about it. You can be as much of a craftsman as you want when you're doing framing because of the degree of difficulty you can create for yourself.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that at first. All I saw was, you know, we used raw wood and sanded it, and it was very, very basic. It was the complexity that I saw later, and I think that's really what ended up stimulating me, inspiring
drawing you in. And
well, at first, I learned from people that were doing it in their backyards, and they're usually these single, older or men, and there was a lot of smoke in this place. So it just there was something about the ambiance that attracted me, and they were gilding and carving, and so I chose what was much more complicated to be financially successful.
But also a kind of business that you get to control. I mean, you could do it by yourself. You can do it with two or three other people, or you can set up a shop that's got two dozen people working.
Right.
I mean, depending on level of success, but you can do it all by yourself if that's the size that you want.
Yeah, I didn't think of control, but I think that probably is part of what was attracting me. There wasn't much material in the 70s written about framing, so it was kind of mysterious.
Is there one frame that you've made, one that either you kept because you didn't want to sell it or give it away, one that you would consider, you know, this is as good as it's going to get for me?
Is there one frame that, you know, I think one of the things that attracts me about it is that once I finish a frame, I have no interest in it because I sort of see what I can do next. There's some that are in, you know, there's one in the Duke Museum, but, you know, it's really difficult for me to. It's not very stimulating.
Right.
So I'm not much on keeping them around.
But Edward admits he has one frame that he's held on to.
Well, the one I've kept is the one I did for my sisters.
The original frame.
The original one, I still have it in the shop. The corners are broken. And
this is like the restaurant owner has the first dollar bill up on the wall.
Right. It's one of the sisters that I did it for died about 10 years ago. So it's special.
Through the years, Edward Wright has hired a number of employees with disabilities, his sisters and others. He could never have known that his own daughter would be among those.
The doctor that delivered her immediately told us that he was concerned.
Had you seen Allison at that point?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I guess, of course, we started worrying, but we didn't know till at least 2 weeks after she actually did have Down syndrome.
And how do you remember that time? Was it hard on you, hard on your wife?
It was terrible. And it was particularly difficult for my wife. And again, I think my experience with people with disabilities made it. But still, right, it's a tragedy, you know. This is not what you expected. We immediately connected the group of parents that were talking about what it was like to have a child and what the doctors did and, you know, some horror stories and some that were good. We started a group that, you know, were together many years after that. We got remarkable support.
And were there people, Edward, saying, well, you know, you have to find a place to put her, that mm-hmm. sort of thing?
Yeah, there was. And I know that my parents, they didn't say that, but I began to sense the horror they went through when Beth and Linda were born, and they really didn't want me to go through the same pain. So I think that they would have liked it to just go away, which infuriated me. But, you know, I understand that. I mean, I can understand it now, but at the time it really, you know, it was very difficult to hear anybody say that, you know, you need to get rid of this child. And
did they come out and say that, or was it always implied?
I think it was always implied. I don't think they said that. And, you know, there were other people that did. I mean, I ignored anybody else. And it was a time where people were not doing that. You know, when she was born in the 80s, they didn't have, you know, big dormitories where they kept people.
Yeah, we were past the sort of mm-hmm. brick house. Mm-hmm. Put them inside there and you won't have to worry about it phase. And then you're in that position of not knowing what kind of development Allison will have, how mm-hmm. far she'll go, you know, can she finish school or will we send her to school or all those questions. How long did that go on, the wondering about Allison's development?
Well, Allison had real good tone, so she's very active. Most Downs kids are very floppy. If I really thought about it, I might be able to remember the frustration, but there really wasn't very much. Of course, you have this child that you don't have any idea, and all of a sudden they are talking. You know, they are walking, you know, so you say, my gosh, this child's really a person. So it wasn't hard to please us because it was so much better than our faults, and we were so excited by the things that she could do.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. I'm talking today with Edward Wright and his daughter, Allison. She's one of those people born with Down syndrome who wind up charging through life seeing the best in everything and everyone. It was really more her mother and her father, Edward, who faced questions about their daughter as she grew.
She'd been very protected in elementary school, and we really wanted to keep her there for another year or two. Yeah. And they said, well, she's got to go to middle school.
And that, that's a mean age. Or
that's a very mean age. And we knew our other kids had had a really hard time in middle school. She thrived in middle school. And I think the reason middle school is so difficult is because kids are so uncertain, unclear, and they're struggling. Allison wasn't struggling at all. She walked right in. She had confidence. So she really thrived in middle school. It was pretty amazing.
Did your other daughters then help her out in middle school, provide her with a little bit of a cushion or a little?
No. No, it was quite the opposite. And my younger daughter, Claire, she had a period there where she really tried to get Allison to like her. And Allison would ignore. You know, she really didn't pay attention to Claire. And I can remember a couple of letters that Claire wrote to Allison trying to explain to her that she really was a good person and that she... Of course, we said, Claire, give us a break. You know, this is... But it was serious. Everybody worried about the effect on Claire, that she would be embarrassed. But really, Claire, at a certain age, was just trying to... Because she saw that Allison got all this attention. She was just sort of insecure herself.
But it seems to me more than Allison getting attention, Allison also... knew who she was and was comfortable in her skin and didn't feel in any way threatened by where she fit in the family hierarchy or where she fit in a classroom.
Right. There was no sense of that. I don't think we could have taught her that. No. She.
How do you
no...
explain that? Because I think when people project, they think, mm-hmm. oh, gosh, I wouldn't want to be...
Well, and I think that's fairly typical of people that I don't think that... Now, Allison is a little clearer, you know, she's out there, she's active, but I think that often they don't see themselves that way. It's trying to understand, why are people looking at me that way? Because I understand who I am and I know what my abilities are.
At some point, Edward Wright decided to bring Allison into his framing business. It was a good fit. Allison was quick to pick up on the work, even though she'll regularly shake her head over the tons and tons of work she has to do.
And tons of work. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi.
This is Radio.
Hi, Radio. Yeah.
I got that idea, and I thought, this could be something that she does. Then I started having her come in the shop and actually do some work. And she got a job as a mail carrier in the morning. She delivers mail in Orange County every day, so everybody, you know, in all the offices know her. And she started coming in the afternoons working, and she would come in with a job coach. And, you know, it just evolved. I found out about actually somebody with a disability owning their own business. So the more I looked into it, it made incredible sense, and it's just become something that the government is really supporting.
Does Allison do a lot of the physical work?
Oh, yes.
In the shop?
Oh, yes.
Were you surprised by her dexterity?
I was surprised that her ability is as good as it was. Because I'd had other people in there with developmental disabilities, and they didn't have the kind of... she's a very hard worker. She's very focused. She's just very good at it. And I'm talking about... She mainly does sanding the frames. She also does real gold. She lays the gold and she burnishes it, which is pretty... I was convinced she was going to be able to do some of the work. But, I have been surprised that she's been as good as she has.
Can you show them some of the frames you've been working on?
Yeah. Just the frames I done. My dad just made the gilding, like gold. Like, my dad just made me how to do the frames.
How long does it take you to do that, Allison?
It's taken me a long time.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. Edward Wright knew that Allison could do the work. Once he decided that she might be able to actually run her own business, that opened up a whole other set of issues.
Yeah, there were some difficult times.
Yeah.
Can you remember some of the hard times, Allison?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Well, the hard times a long time ago, those meetings, the circle of friends, you know that.
Well, but the circle of friends were easy. Allison went through a couple of managers.
I was ahead, okay, Dad?
Okay.
Yeah, you see, I have one management. Her name is Lauren. And she is wonderful. She's a really, really hard worker. Well, you see, Lauren likes to quit. Well, she was somebody else.
So when she said to you,
right,
I quit, what was that like for you?
Well, I was very, very upset.
What happened? Did you try to talk to her? Did you cry? What happened?
My dad called me to handle and about my management, Lauren.
Let me just make sure that I understand what happened. Lauren quit.
Right.
And then you were upset.
Right.
And then your dad called you?
Exactly. He told me to go eat some breakfast with my dad. And then Lauren, she had to have just somebody else to know that too. But this happened to dad.
Well, she had two. Yeah, she had two managers. And it was... They just, neither one of them worked out. I mean, they had different reasons for leaving. And it was hard for them because they really enjoyed Allison. But that was hard.
Did you think at the time, Edward, maybe Allison should not be running her own business? Did you have
some thoughts? Oh, no. We were convinced we just needed to find the right person. That was very discouraging, you know, to lose, have somebody in there and it not work out because we put a lot of energy into it.
How about you, Allison? Did you ever want to quit? Just say, I don't want to do this.
I don't have to quit. So this is a part of my business.
I know it's your business, but I mean, you could at some point, you might have just said, you know what? I don't want to run this business anymore. This is too much work.
Right. Well, because it's my business. And so I don't have to quit because I hired a management.
And I think one thing that was important is just for somebody to be both sensitive to Allison and able to work with her and to run a business is, as I saw people coming in, it's a very difficult position. And starting a business right from the bottom up and also, you know, connecting. And there were people that connected with Allison that may have not had necessarily the energy to do the business.
You're listening to The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. Allison Wright's a picture framer who recently took charge of her own business making custom frames. And Allison did finally settle on a new business manager, someone who works very closely with her. His name is Clay Bowles, and he's also with us in the studio. We'll hear from him in just a moment. Allison is the one who hired him.
Because I interview with Clay, and, he's really, really good. Good job.
The other thing, though, that I can imagine being difficult for someone who comes in is someone comes in and goes, okay, who's the real boss here? Is Allison the real boss or is her dad the real boss? You know what I mean? And where?
I don't think there was any doubt it was the boss. I think there's some truth in that because she has what's called a circle of friends where people come in and all of them are there
right,
to support
Dad.
Her.
Right.
And if I get in the way, they're usually, you know, pointing it out. Or
yeah.
Allison, let me ask you a couple of questions about working. What time do you start each day?
I work at about 1 or 4:30.
1 to 4:30 every day?
Yes.
And you have to be there every day?
Every day.
And what happens if you don't show up?
Well, you must have made some money. Yeah. Well,
but everybody expects you to be there, right? Because you're the boss. You can't just say, I don't feel like it today. You have to be there.
Exactly. Whether I want to or not.
What if there's some frames that you're building and they're not finished? It's 4:30 and the frames aren't finished. Do you stay late? Do you work overtime?
No. Well, some, you know, go all over the time.
Does Clay work overtime?
Yes, he does.
Is that because you tell him to work overtime or just because he wants to?
Well, he wants to, but he is not really, really a boss. He's a management.
And you're the boss.
Right. Well, because I lock up, you know, the door. Clay wants to lock up, but he's not an owner. So he's teasing me. Because I'm working like 1 until 4:30.
He thinks you should work more?
He said, 5:30! He said, Clay, not 5:30. I said 4:30. How about 6? No, not 7:30.
Tough to be the boss sometimes, right?
Yeah.
It's tough to be the boss.
Yeah, I am the boss.
We should have Clay come in.
Yeah.
Even though he's manager and you're the boss, it's okay if we have him in here?
Yeah. Clay, why don't you come in?
Hey,
it's how to say Clay.
Yes, ma'am, Allison.
Hey, Allison, do you remember when you hired Clay?
I hired a long time ago.
Was there a job interview?
Yes. Yes, this is a job interview.
You interviewed Clay, is that right?
Yes.
What questions did you ask him?
I asked him how to do the frames, how to do the safety, how to do the trash can.
How to empty the trash?
Yeah, I went through a series of interviews. I went through one with my supervisor. I went through one with Allison. And as I was, walking into the cubicle to go do this interview, I was like, all right, I ain't going to be nervous. I can do this. First question Allison asked me, can you take out the trash? I'm like, well, wait a second. I'm trying to be a business manager, not a janitor. I said, Allison, I can take out the trash. And then she goes, are you clean? Is your area clean? I'm like, well, yes.
How long have you two been working together now?
It's been, I've been her business manager for about 6 months, and she hired me, and then I've been happy ever since.
We're looking in on Allison Wright's new picture framing business. Her father helped her set it up. Allison's the boss, and Clay Bowles helps her through each day. Up next, a day at the shop. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. Allison Wright is the owner of a micro-business, making and selling custom wood frames for mirrors and pictures. Although Allison was born with Down syndrome, she's never let that get in her way. In fact, she's part of a new trend in custom-fitting the workplace to someone's particular abilities. Allison goes to work each day at her father's frame shop, but then she and her business manager, Clay Bowles, do their own thing, in the shop, with the customers.
Well, it starts off at, I start talking, then Allison, of course, jumps right in and explains everything and what we're going to do. I handle the financial aspect, tell them how much it costs. Allison makes sure they're happy. Allison talks with them, to make the customer feel like they're right at home and that we do good work. Just because Allison has a disability don't mean that she does bad work. She does awesome work. And all I do is just handle the financial aspects, as far as how much it'll cost and the transportation of the product. Allison handles, all the niceness, all the creativity,
Yeah, I know that kind. I've been a nice and the kind person.
Yeah, you are.
But you're the nice one, he's the tough one? Is that what you're saying?
Well.
When you're in the business of selling frames, though, do you guys find that there's some people, sometimes, they don't want to talk to Allison? They only want to talk to Clay. Because they say, Allison has a disability. I want to talk to the person who doesn't have the disability. Does this happen?
We try not to deal with people like that. Me and Edward talked about it for, a little bit. Edward's come up to me, saying this might be a potential buyer, but I don't know if they'll do well working with Allison. I'm like, cut it out right then and there, This is what we do.
And do you say that to the buyer?
Yeah.
Do you
say I say that to Edward. I have never said it to a buyer, but I don't even want to communicate with people like that. Our business would be a lie then. I'm not trying to hide anything. You know what I'm saying? This is Allison's business. If they're ashamed to work with Allison, they're ashamed to work with me because, I'm the manager. She's the owner. Can you tell Dick, what do we do on Thursdays, Allison?
On Thursday, we went to the Home Depot.
Do we go to museums sometimes?
Museums sometimes.
Why do you go to the museum, Allison?
Well, just look at the fancy for the frames.
It's funny. Most people go to the museum to look at the art. You guys are going to look at the
frame.
We go to look at the frame. Just to inspire creativity. You know, most people stay at work and, you know, same thing every single day, you know, and you kind of gets dull. Well, with Allison, you know, I want to keep everything exciting. So maybe once a month on Thursdays, if we ain't got anything to work on, we'll go to a museum. We'll go to Home Depot, check out the cost of wood, supplies.
Supplies, you know, and the things. Yeah, that.
Have you guys got a name for your company yet?
Not yet. I haven't got a name yet.
We have a committee that meets once a month to talk about business issues. And we haven't come up with a name yet. We've been in business for 6 months, and we've been discussing it.
What are your different ideas?
Well, my idea was that do a play on words and call it The Right Frames, you know?
W-R-I-G-H-T.
Exactly.
Allison's last name. The Right Frames. Yeah.
Right. Well, you see, I don't want to put Frames by Allison Wright.
A.W. Frames.
Right.
That's the name you like.
Well, no, it's not. Well, it's boring.
It's boring.
Yeah, I was introduced to my business name, Allison Wright in an LLC.
But aren't you the boss?
Yeah, I am.
So can't you just decide what the name is?
Well, I can put like...
But you have to talk to the committee about it, right? Everybody has to agree on this name.
Right.
That's Allison Wright. The name's still not decided, but they are in business, and it's not just frames. This shop-bought machine can do all kinds of carving. One of Allison's customers, Chuck, was in the shop talking about work being done on the legs of a conference table.
So this is a way oversized table, but it's relatively typical of what we make. It's a big conference table. The parts that Allison makes for us are, this is a foot down here, so that whole shape gets painted black and dressed up nicely, and then the body parts go inside of the stainless steel and make the form for us to bend that steel around. So I think everybody is happy on this end anyway.
Everybody.
And we will like working with Allison and everybody else who's involved. It's been a pleasure.
All right, buddy.
Take it easy.
I'm going to take it easy,
man. All right,
man.
I'm going to listen to you on the radio next week.
I don't like it, man. All right, man. In a minute, man.
Have a story party. Story listening party.
And have a pizza.
Pizza, there you go.
She comes to work every day smiling. I mean, like me or you or Edward, you know, sometimes we'll get down about life and don't feel like working that day. Allison, every time I go pick her up, you know, she is awesome, wanting to work. Clay, I'm ready. I'm going to open up the shop. I'm going to work on the frames. I'm ready to sand. I mean, she's all for it, man. You can't find nobody more special than that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to ask you the same question that I asked to Clay.
Okay.
You've been together now about 6 months, working in this new, you're the boss, he's the manager.
Right.
What have you learned about Clay?
Well, because I learned hard, you know, I love Clay. I think he's wonderful medicine.
He's a wonderful manager.
Thank you, Allison.
Yeah, I want to hear that. What I learned with him, and he is doing good job. For difficult with me, I think with Clay, I think he's know what he is.
What you're saying is you guys are a pretty good team.
We like to communicate. I mean, that's the main thing with me and Alice. We got to communicate. You know, if she's feeling, you know, upset, I want to find out what's wrong with her. Just like if I'm feeling upset about something that she's doing, she'll come and say, Clay, what's wrong? What's your issues? And I'll tell her, you know, and we'll work it out. Her attitude is just so awesome. You know, we had a contract here recently where we're doing the Christmas trees, but we weren't making enough profit off of them. So we decided that we couldn't do it no more, and I thought we would lose the contract. You know, we make other stuff as far as ornament frames, too. And me and Allison go to her house, and I had to tell her the bad news. I was like, we're not going to be able to make the Christmas trees. Well, she was so fixated on Allison being happy that she could care less if we did the Christmas trees. You know, she says, well, I have to have y'all in my business. I want to work with y'all. I love working with Allison. And y'all can continue making my ornament frames. Don't worry about it. That's the awesome thing about working with Allison. I couldn't have did that. I couldn't have changed that lady's mind, you know, but Allison could.
You know.
So, Allison, some people will listen to our conversation. Some people will listen to us on the radio. And they will be hearing about your dad and you and Clay.
Yeah.
But they're also going to be hearing about these frames. What makes these frames so special? Why are these frames so good? Why should somebody want to buy a frame from Allison Wright?
Well, because we are the best business.
We are? Why?
Well, because we want to. We want to make the business in our own way. We can make stuff in the frames, like picture frames, mm-hmm. mirror frames, you know, like...
Can we do any kind of frame?
Yeah, sure.
So, Allison, are your frames the best ones around?
Yes, it is.
Why are they the best ones around?
Well, because my frames is my best ones. It is just getting smooth. Put a pattern in the hose. You're sanding the wood. You can paint them.
So that's why we're the best. You know how to do it right, Allison.
Yeah, we can do the best job. Well, because my dad's a really, really good tester.
He's pretty good at making frames too, your dad, right?
Yeah.
I think he has some experience.
Yeah.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. Allison Wright's father, Edward, is the one who set his daughter up in business. And he learned long ago in life that whether it was making a place in his shop for his two blind sisters or his daughter with Down syndrome, the success on both sides comes from a recognition that we all have our own failings, weaknesses.
Most people's disabilities are hidden. You know, we all have them. And theirs are not. So in an odd way, there's, and sometimes a very destructive way, is that, you know, you try to fix. If you're in a work environment, and this does happen in our work environment, and things aren't going quite well, the tendency is to, and I think that's just human nature, is to say, well, what's going wrong is that we have somebody here that's disabled, and let's try to, we could work on that. We may not be able to work on the other things because they're so complicated, but we can work on this thing.
Because it's obvious.
It's obvious. And, you know, that has a lot of negative consequences, but I think what ultimately it does in the workplace. And I think this has been sort of my attraction. I haven't always been conscious of this, is that they sort of put out the struggles and the uneasiness that we all experience and make it visible. And I think it adds to the healthiness of a workplace. It's not always easy to recognize, but I think if you work in a workplace, and for one reason or another, many years I've had somebody right in the front of the shop that has a disability, and they're very present, and I think it has been sort of like the soul of the shop, that it brings an awareness, I think, that is healthy. It's been only recently that I've sort of been aware of that because it's always been very natural for me to do it. I didn't think about it, but I begin to realize how other people really see it as something unusual, and they become a little uneasy about it. But it adds remarkable value to a workplace.
I would count myself among those who see it as unusual simply because, you know, to seek out people with disabilities and to put them in positions of responsibilities isn't what we normally do. And if I understand what you're saying correctly, you're saying you do it because it's good for the business as well as them. It's not just a kind of, I'm going to help you out because no one else will hire you gesture.
Right. I think I've only started recently realizing my attraction to it. And, you know, it's because of my sisters, but I think I instinctively think this really is healthy. It may not look healthy. It may look a little, but I think I have been attracted to it as sort of an essential thing of a healthy business, because there are all kinds of disabilities going on in a business. And the thing that is so destructive is that we tend to push it. You know, we have our organization, we have our clarity, we have our bottom line that is a way of ignoring that. And people with disabilities, I think, raise it to the surface. They won't compromise. You know, the rest of us will just put our hours in, and that's not what they're there for. I mean, they're not there to just put in their hours. They're there to have a good time. And they're going to find a way to have a good time. It may be to please, you know, or it may be just to enjoy the work. And if they don't, they're going to yell.
Going in earning money, gritting your teeth, putting up with a boss that you don't like, or whatever it is not part
it's
of
not
the...
in their package, which I also think is healthy. I mean, if you
healthy
see
for the whole workplace,
yes,
not just
because
for
you see somebody there that's having fun, and you know, I'm constantly getting after Alice. I mean, she's talking to herself, and I say, look, you've got to be professional. You know, I'm doing all that stuff. You got to dress right. You know, you got to say the right thing. But it's that spirit of just total selfishness. You know, this is for me. That is refreshing. I mean, it, you know, if we all were that free, I don't know how the world would exist. But it's ultimately a relief and an inspiration for workplace.
Edward Wright and Allison Wright and Clay Bowles all work at Frames by Edward Wright in Hillsboro, North Carolina. A thank you to Red and Holly in Durham, who recommended the story to me. You can read more about the Wright family business on the web. We have a link for you at our website. You can find it at thestory.org. Yesterday on The Story, I talked with Chris Cathcart. He wrote an essay called A Message to My Straight Brothers, It's Time to Talk About Our Homophobia. Chris was telling me how dangerous anti-gay attitudes are within the black community and how they make life even tougher for gay African Americans. I asked Chris if he knew whether speaking out against black homophobia actually changed anyone's attitude.
One time in particular, I spoke on a panel in Washington, D.C., and as a guy, I didn't know him directly. We're familiar through college friends, and he mentioned afterwards that he really appreciated the work I was doing. And, you know, basically he was saying he was apologizing more or less for not doing it sooner or not doing more. But the interesting thing, though, is that a lot of guys who are gay come up to me. One guy in tears in Washington who came up and hugged me, and he said, I really appreciate the work that you're doing. I can't tell you how important it is. And, you know, I told him, as much as I appreciate what he said, I said, I still can't never really understand what you've gone through. To be black, male, and gay in America, I can't imagine what your day-to-day life had been like growing up when you were shunned from, you know, all the institutions that we take for granted, the barbershops, the churches, the community centers, the schools, all the little groups and organizations that we socialize with in our neighborhoods, oftentimes went open to these guys. I kind of apologized to him. I said, you know, I'm sorry it took so long.
After Chris spoke, Robert from Long Beach, California, wrote in to say, it was very moving to hear a straight black man talk about his homophobia and what he's done to combat it. I am a gay white male in my 50s and lived with a lot of sissy accusations when I was growing up. There is a lot of shame that was thrown at us over the years, and it's been hard to let go of that. Robert goes on to say, Chris's story and interview was an inspiration and very meaningful. I've also been a Baptist minister at a multicultural, multiracial church in Oakland, and the black church was one of the last organizations to face the fact that they were losing a whole generation of young, talented men to AIDS because they couldn't admit there were gays and lesbians in their church. There is a lot of homophobia out there to combat. Maybe one day it'll be a thing of the past. I hope you can join me tomorrow when I talk with Sharom Ahari. Sharom has been invited to testify in front of a Senate Special Committee on Aging. He'll be talking about the way that pharmaceuticals are marketed to doctors across the country and how the health of their patients may be compromised in the process. Now, marketing drugs is something Sharom knows a fair bit about because he used to do the selling himself when he worked for a major pharmaceutical company. He tells me that when he got hired and trained in sales, it was almost like being indoctrinated.
When you go into sales school, they train you in the basic rudimentary science of the medications you're selling. But a great deal of that is inculcating you into the culture of the company and making you enthusiastic about the products you're selling. So when I left sales school, I was convinced that my products were going to save everyone's lives, and the only thing that's actually preventing me from helping all those poor, sick people are ignorant doctors. And you might say I drank the Kool-Aid.
Sharom Ahari, tomorrow on The Story, talking about selling pharmaceuticals. to doctors. I hope you can join me for that. If you have any thoughts or suggestions about stories that you're hearing on the program, we're always open to hearing from you. You can write to me using a pen and a paper or a typewriter if you still have one kicking around. Our mailing address is The Story, 120 Friday Center Drive, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Our zip code is 27517. It's probably a little faster, a little easier to get to me through our website. Go to thestory.org and you'll find a couple of buttons there that allow you to contact me and the other people who work here to let us know what you're thinking about what you're hearing or to give us a suggestion of a story. You can also leave us a message on our toll-free telephone line at 1-888-966-9862. That's 1-888-966-9862. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
The Story is a production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
American Public Media.